From the top of Heartbreak Hill in Santa Fe, New Mexico, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show. Coming up this week, is pro cycling going to continue to be ruined by fans, or does it need to be ruined for fans to make it safer? We discuss the potential ramifications of the latest hooligan behaviour.
Cycling hooligan? Crikey, Si. We've gone a bit Paris-Roubaix crazy this week, actually, after two fantastic races at the weekend. But don't worry, the rest of it is all positive.
Indeed. We have got how a basketball legend thinks he can help UAE Team Emirates, how we predicted the future 8 years ago, and how Alex Payton was humbled on his recent US trip.
This week in the world of cycling, we learn that the new queen of Paris-Roubaix is Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, and the new king is the same as the old one.
Yeah, so Prevot becomes the first French woman to ever win the race and the first French person since Frédéric Gaudin in 1997. For Vanderpool, though, it was his third victory on the bounce, making him only the third rider in history to get a hat-trick.
Correct, and the first one in 50 years, Si. Both, of course, are the ultimate all-round riders, having each won road, cyclocross and gravel world titles. Prevot has also done what MVDP only dreams of at the moment, though. Not just one, but five world mountain bike titles.
Yeah, and an Olympics.
And an Olympics, yeah.
Funny, actually, they've got nine world titles each.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, different spread, obviously. Now, we also learned that there is a downside to being gifted a £300,000 watch.
Yes, Pogacar would have got to the Roubaix Velodrome on Sunday unscathed, despite his crash, were it not for his very expensive luxury watch vibrating so much on his wrist over the cobblestones, it drew quite a lot of blood.
That looks painful, doesn't it?
It does.
I've got to say, I am now more glad than ever that no one has gifted me a £300,000 watch.
I'm sure, Si, I'm sure. Finally this week, we learned that a complete knob slash man threw a full bead on at Mathieu van der Poel's face on Sunday whilst he was soloing his way to a third straight win in Roubaix.
Yeah, good job he didn't have very good aim, wasn't it? But it was
what? Pretty good aim.
Well, it didn't hit his face, did it?
I thought he did.
No, I think it bounced off his... Anyway, we digress here. Whatever it was... I mean, it was despicable, wasn't it, really? Like, genuinely, utterly despicable. But it appears to be an incident that's getting more commonplace. So pictures later emerged of a beer being thrown at Van der Poel 9 days before he was spat at E3, wasn't he? Whilst last year, it was a woman throwing a hat into his wheels. And we should also say as well that Kat Ferguson crashed out of the women's race on Saturday because she said a spectator stepped out in front of her on the cobbles.
Yes. Now, the man who threw that bead on into Van der Poel's face, I think, on Sunday, he has handed himself into West Flanders police, and according to Het Nieuwsblad's source, he's expressed remorse and regret for his actions, which isn't enough to be let off the hook, at least in my opinion. An example needs to be made of this sort of behaviour to at least try and dissuade others from doing anything similar.
I don't disagree, mate, but the trouble is examples were made, weren't they, of the woman last year who threw the hat and the person with the Oppy Omi sign that took out half the Tour de France a few years ago, but it hasn't seemed to have done anything so far, has it? So this series of incidents does raise a wider question, doesn't it, about whether something needs to be done to prevent the possibility of this sort of happening.
Yeah.
To the thing happening in the first place.
It's not the first time this debate has come up, of course. As you mentioned, Oppy Omi Gate, the 2020 Tour de France.
That was a gate, wasn't it?
You put a gate on the end of controversial stuff, don't you?
Right, yeah, okay.
That was gate. There have also been countless occasions with things like dogs or phones or even those cardboard hands for the green jersey that the Tour de France official race vehicles handed out many years ago at that race.
Yeah, and in some of those cases, things have been done to help, haven't they? So barriers at finish lines are now designed differently, and they very quickly stopped handing out the cardboard hands that had the ability to slash fast-moving biceps. But the vast majority of races are held on completely open roads that are never going to be barriered, are they?
No, and there's never really a satisfactory conclusion to this debate, is there? Because firstly, well, it's amazing to have fans on the roadside. The atmosphere for the riders, for the fans, and even for those of us watching on TV is just so much richer for it.
It is. It totally is, isn't it? I mean, if you listen to commentary without the sound of spectators, it's nowhere near as good, is it?
No.
And we should say...
Or helicopters.
weirdly, all helicopters. We should say that in events like Paris-Roubaix, like, they are only becoming more popular at the roadside, aren't they? Compared to the... This is a nice anecdotal bit of evidence here, but the one time I watched it on the roadside, 2013, I think compared to this year, watching it on TV, there must have been tens of thousands more people
watching. Oh, really?
Watching. Yeah, yeah.
That
you
much
could,
different?
Oh, you could easily find a space to stand on Carrefour de l'Arbre, whereas this year, it was just absolutely packed, wasn't it? The whole thing.
It'd be interesting to know the numbers, but I don't suppose they're out there. But anyway, everyone also agrees that the unique free access and proximity, I guess, to bike races and riders is one of the sport's main selling points. But also, everyone can see that the potential danger is being posed to riders, and that's really big,
yes.
Big danger.
So should you therefore spoil something that is so good for so many just because of a select few incidents? Because, for example, the Tour of the Basque Country, which was on last week as well, the crowds there are legendary, aren't they? So not only are they amongst the most passionate in the world, they're also some of the most respectful. And so you never really feel like one of those bad apples, as in a bad apple spectator, is just around the corner.
No, that's very true. That is very true. I have got a theory, though, when it comes to some Belgian cycling fans.
Right.
I just feel like they've got a different mentality than some of the other nations' spectators.
It feels like you might be about to alienate a whole nation.
Well, I'm going to do my best not to, having started this. Bear with me. So, cycling in Belgium, and particularly Flanders, I would say, it's just different.
Okay.
I would say that in almost every other country, the sort of person who's going to go to a bike race and spectate on the roadside is either A, local, the race happens to be passing outside their doorstep,
okay.
Or B, they're a cyclist themselves, i.e. they'd ride their bike as a leisure pursuit.
Okay. So how is Belgium different?
Belgium is different because there are a lot of fans who go to watch Flanders or Roubaix or E3 or whatever who don't actually ride a bike as a leisure pursuit. It's like a national sport there, and much more akin to how I would see football fans here in the UK and lots of other nations. As in, your average football fan who pays to go and watch their team probably isn't playing five-a-side at the weekends or in the evenings. Some do, of course, but most just watch the sport and don't play it themselves.
So I'm not entirely sure how this explains fans' behaviour.
Because there's just much more of a herd mentality with Belgian fans, I'd say.
Keep digging, mate.
Well, actually, not most. At least some football fans are so passionate about their own team that they hate every other team.
Yeah,
I think that's fairly fair to say. And I think in Belgium, there are fans who are so passionate about, let's say, Wout van Aert, for example, being a Belgian rider, that they hate his arch-rival Mathieu van der Poel. Lots of the incidents we said at the start of the show were towards Mathieu van der Poel. Now, I'm not excusing it by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying that if you have that mentality and then you add alcohol into the mix, the incidents that we've seen this year and last year can be the result.
Yes. Okay, I see what you mean. And I think, as you say, the fact that some people get really, really, really drunk is a major problem, right? It doesn't, unfortunately, help us find a solution to this problem, does it? The fact remains that this is a small minority who could potentially spoil it all for the well-behaved majority. So perhaps to your point before, punishments for offenders being strong enough would deter people so that even when they're absolutely plastered, they still think twice about their actions.
Yeah. What sort of... Actually, I read that one Belgian commentator had suggested on air that the person who threw that bead on be sort of tied against a wall and that all the riders that competed at Roubaix got a full bead on and threw it at them.
Oh, my God. I mean, legal punishments, financial punishments. I think bringing back corporal punishment is a little bit Middle Ages for my taste. Yeah. Two wrongs don't make a right,
I'm in agreement. And I was quite surprised, I must admit, when I read that he'd said that in commentary live on air. Mm. Although I guess you can understand the anger in the moment especially. I was seething, I've got to say, when I first saw it. Still now to a degree. I mean, you just shouldn't do it, should you?
No.
But anyway, do we have any other potential solutions to this problem?
Well, I think we should separate out the fact that there are two types of incident, aren't there, that we're talking about under one umbrella. So there is the drunk, aggressive fan who, I think you are probably right, the only real logical outcome is to get the police involved and deter people, although there's an argument as to whether or not that will work. And then there's the genuine accident of a fan who is there for good reasons, who just, I don't know, doesn't get out of the way in time, or they slip, or they have a camera strap that hangs over the barriers and it hooks a rider that passes close. Was it Peter Sagan that got hooked with a jacket?
Yeah, in Flanders.
Yeah, and Lance Armstrong got hooked with a musette. Yeah. And, you know, it happens, right? And in that instance, I don't know, I mean, having some sort of rope that keeps spectators more than an art, it's a fairly primitive reason. But, like, you know what I mean? If there was a gap, like an arm's reach gap between the riders and then the spectators, I appreciate you can't barrier a 260-kilometre race terribly easily, because you'd have to barrier both sides of road, wouldn't you? So it'd be a 520 kilometres of rope.
Like it.
And people would probably ignore it or push the rope aside anyway.
Yeah.
But with so many people videoing races on their phones, it does feel like that might mitigate some of the accidents. Mm. That
Plus, you would have to have a better aim with your full bead on then if you're slightly further away, wouldn't you, to hit somebody in the face with the same bead on.
I mean, you wouldn't have to have much better aim, and it certainly wouldn't stop that, would it? No. But yeah, it would be a measure that would reduce some of the risk.
True. But like I said, that is a lot of rope / barriers in a monument.
Maybe they could have rope sponsors. Maybe this would open up a whole new avenue for monetization of professional cycling. But races are changing, aren't they? And they are opening up earlier and earlier.
They are.
Aren't they? So take yesterday, for example, we used to have almost a full peloton coming into the Arenberg Forest, didn't we?
Yeah, but now, sprint finish.
Basically, yeah, but now we're seeing splits well before that, because of the overall speed, probably in large part because the riders want to make it easier and safer for themselves, don't they, when things get particularly gnarly.
All good points.
Yeah,
Not quite sure how these relate to safety and spectators.
Well, the speeds are higher, aren't they, in places where they probably wouldn't have thought previously that there was a need for barriers or ropes in previous years. But now, because they're flying over the cobbles at up to 60k an hour, still with 120 kilometres or more to go. So it is going to make it even harder.
Yeah, very true, very true. It is a minefield, though, isn't it, when you start digging into it? Because where would these measures stop, really? I just wonder whether we're always going to reach the same conclusion, which is, yes, it would be nicer for the riders if there was no chance of fan interference, but the positives of having roadside fans is always going to outweigh the risks of them being there. And so if no obvious simple solution, we keep things the same and accept the risks as they are.
Yeah. I mean, as a rider many years ago, albeit not one who was in with a shout at winning Paris-Roubaix.
Not winning it.
In part because I never raced Paris-Roubaix, nor was I ever famous enough for anyone to ever care about throwing a bottle at. I've got to be said, I loved races that had loads of spectators.
But like,
they were so much better to race. And probably true for you too, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the atmosphere that you'd have with thousands and thousands of spectators versus none is completely different. If you take the Tour of Britain here, for example, European riders used to be very reluctant to come over here and race that. But as more and more fans came to watch on the roadside, more and more riders enjoyed and wanted to do it.
Yeah.
It was the same crappy weather, the same long transfers between stages and hotels, but a fantastic atmosphere. In fact, more than you'd get at a lot of European high-end races.
Yeah. So what are we saying then, after all this? There is a ticking time bomb, essentially, but we can't work out how to defuse it.
No, exactly.
Without 540 kilometres of roads.
But maybe.
520 kilometres.
Yeah.
Apart from in San Remo, where it's nearly 600 kilometres.
Well, I mean, it's close to 270k, isn't it, Roubaix and Flanders?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, maybe one of our viewers, or more than one of our viewers, has a better solution.
Yeah.
So if you're watching this, kind of frustrated that you can't get the publicity for your ingenious solution, the fan safety problem, just let us know in the comments section below, and we'll either A, read it out next week, or B, claim it as our own and make our millions.
Do you know what? My bet is that someone could 3D print a solution. Don't know what it is, but the stuff that people do with 3D printers.
Or just zip tie people's hands behind their backs.
Yeah, imagine that.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with some Paris-Roubaix news.
We are indeed.
Tech news, though.
Tech news, yes. So gone are the days when teams would deploy cyclocross bikes for this job. And then more recently, endurance road bikes like the Trek de Marne or the Specialized Roubaix. Now, normal race bikes are more than up to the job, thanks in the main to disc brakes giving wider tyre clearance.
That's kind of triggered some people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks to disc brakes. But actually, it's kind of true, isn't it, that tyre clearance thing? Something that has been used to full effect. Some teams are even using 35mm wide tyres, which, we should point out, you aren't even allowed to use that in cyclocross races.
Amazing. Perhaps it's because these teams and riders, Si, have watched our GCN video from 8 years ago. So Si here and our former presenter Matt Stevens put a road bike up against a cyclocross bike and a mountain bike over the cobbles of Roubaix. And even though it was heavier and put the rider in a completely unaero position, the mountain bike was fastest, wasn't it?
Spoiler alert!
Not really, it was 8 years ago, that video, as mentioned.
That is true, yeah. Anyway, while I don't think riders are going to be using 60mm wide tyres anytime soon, it is fascinating, isn't it, to see how perspectives have changed on all of this, even down to Visma Leasebike riders using that Grava adjustable tyre pressure system.
And also to good effect again, you'd have to say, because Pauline Prevot used it to win.
She did.
Pauline Ferron-Prevot, to give her a full name. No such tech though was used by Mathieu van der Poel in the men's race on Sunday. He was on his trusty Canyon Aeroad with only 32mm Pirelli P0 Race TLR RS tyres, as opposed to 30s.
That's right, his usual 30s. Our French GCN colleague Louis was there, wasn't he? He saw a few teams, he said, gluing their tubeless tyres in place using tubular glue. So you've got to be kind of old to know about tubular tyres these days. But anyway,
I've heard of it.
That is an interesting twist, isn't it? And in part, we think, perhaps because they were running pressures as low as 2.1 bar, he said, which is 30 psi.
Unbelievable,
in a 32mm tyre, yeah.
I wouldn't like to see their wheels conditioned at the end of the race with that kind of combination.
No, not at all.
In spite of the head and crosswinds, the women's was the fastest ever edition, and the men's, well, it was the second fastest ever.
Yeah. Now, sticking with racing news, although we're going to swap cobbles for gravel now, a new venue has been found for the World Championships after Nice pulled out of hosting this year's event. Instead, it'll be the Limburg region of the Netherlands.
Quite a change of venue, really.
Very nice. It's going to be a heck of a lot flatter. Yeah. A little bit more mellow.
And a lot closer to us. So great. Not just the venue that's changed, though, also the date. So it's one weekend sooner. But unfortunately, that means it will clash with the fifth monument of the year, at least the same weekend, Lombardia. So it's unlikely we'll see Pogacar again this time.
You do think, though, or you would think, rather, that he would want to do it at some
You'd
point.
You'd imagine so,
wouldn't
at
you?
Some point, yes. Yeah. Who would win, him or Van der Poel, Gravel Worlds?
Whoa, that's a good question. I mean, in Nice, I'd have said Pogacar.
Well, yeah.
In Limburg, I don't know. Like I said, last year's race was actually a lot more technical than most people realised. Mm. So I think probably Van der Poel would have had a bit of an advantage.
Maybe 1 year we will find out. I'm not even going to bother answering. Sticking with gravel, though, the first round of the Premier Gravel Series in the US, the Lifetime Grand Prix, started last week with our very own Alex Payton in the mix for a while as well.
Now, another spoiler alert. He unfortunately didn't win.
No, he didn't win, did he? He was beaten by Keegan Svensson, who maintained his position as king of US dirt racing with what was quite a solid win.
Yeah, he was beaten by Keegan, wasn't he? And one or two others.
Yeah, one or two others, wasn't it? Yeah. It was Olympic mountain bike silver medalist Hayley Batten who destroyed the women's field after skipping the opening rounds of the Mountain Bike World Cup, which were taking place in Brazil.
Yeah, she won by minutes, didn't she? Svensson, I think, was second. She was minutes. Mm. Right, now, slight change of gear now, but there's been some exciting new tech rolled out on YouTube. It means that you can now watch a GCN video dubbed into one of eight languages.
Yeah, taking a lot of work behind the scenes, but we are very proud to say that you can now hear us fluent in nine... I'm not even fluent in English. You can now hear us fluent in nine languages. And please bear in mind, it takes a bit longer to record eight extra voiceovers for our videos too.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, wasn't it, for us to learn all of those languages. Now, while you might not need Dan and I to speak Indonesian, it will open up the English-speaking channel to a wider audience. And then hopefully soon as well, it will give English speakers access to GCN Italia, GCN en Français, GCN en Espagnol, and GCN auf Deutsch as well.
Well, with those language skills just displayed there, Si, you should be able to present all those languages already.
Well, yeah. I mean, I take that as a compliment, even though I know it's not.
Yes.
Now, moving on, Dan and I are proof that ex-pro cyclists have a general lack of talent at anything other than cycling. And
possibly including it.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, and any talent that was there is rapidly eroding. But a timely reminder of this came just last week, actually, from UAE Team Emirates and their current pros.
it was an entertaining watch, should I say, wasn't it? Yeah, so a reminder that pro cyclists can ride bikes like gods, but they can't really do anything else.
No.
So here they are, UAE Team Emirates, who were racing and winning the Tour of the Basque Country last week, shooting and missing hoops.
Basketball Hall of Famer and cycling fan Reggie Miller got involved. He replied with a suggestion that he could perhaps share some of his much-needed skills if they could show him how to refine his skills riding in a
Fantastic.
Peloton.
A fun fact about Reggie Miller, not sure if you know this, he's not as tall as Connor.
He's not as tall as Connor?
No.
I did not know that. Did you know that Connor's actually quite good at basketball?
I found this out a week ago when I also found out he was county-level tennis player as well.
Yeah, he's quite, yeah, he is multi-talented ex-pro.
I can't help but think he chose the wrong sport in the end.
They call me the Tony Hawk of the cycling world. Voila.
Now, we have had so many comments under our video about the $1 trillion traffic problem that we released a couple of weeks back. And honestly, it's been amazing to read them all. There's been loads of stories shared, both negative and positive, we should say, about changes to traffic policy and stuff. Now, people have left those under the video, and also people have made contacts personally as well. So thank you very much to those.
There have been so many comments, haven't there?
Yeah.
The USA, by and large, seems to be the place with the biggest headwinds, but two positive stories caught our attention last week. So the mayor of Boston was challenged in a public meeting about her presiding over protected bike lanes being ripped out, but took the opportunity to reaffirm her support for cycling infrastructure and actually even improving it.
Yeah, which is great news. She did also continue to address concerns about bike lanes held by some people in Boston, including causing congestion and harming the economy, which we know is a whole load of rubbish. If you don't know there's a whole load of rubbish, then you need to watch the $1 trillion problem video. Most interestingly, though, is Houston, okay, which has real problems. People have got in touch to tell us specifically about those. The mayor there has seemed to have rode back on ripping out bike infrastructure, which is something he was previously hell-bent on. I'm hoping that I can get out to Houston this year. I'd never thought it would be somewhere I would want to go and ride a bike, if I'm honest. Mm. But times have changed.
They have, indeed. Probably just as well your focus as well is changing, isn't it? You're not getting any faster, so you might as well become a... Now, I term this really radical urbanist.
I mean, I'm not sure what one of those is, but you are right. I'm definitely not getting any faster.
No.
Or am I? Check out Sunday's video, which is the conclusion to 90 days of weight training.
Oh, yes. How shall I put this bit? Looking at you, I wouldn't say the results are immediately obvious or evident.
I don't know what you mean, mate. And appearances can be deceiving, can't they?
Yeah, they can.
Yeah.
Right.
Or it can be deceptive. Are deceiving appearances are deceiving?
Oh, crikey. I mean...
Don't know. We're fluent in 9 languages, but yeah, we do struggle from time to time in English.
People are watching this in French anyway, at this point. All right, we're going to finish...
Alors donc...
cycling shorts with some Ruvi news, actually. So as of today, Ruvi have added a new tool that will allow users to sort of record, customise and then ride their own routes with the same quality as the routes that are already on their platform.
Yeah, so super exciting, isn't it? So effectively, if you go out with an onboard camera that has inbuilt GPS, so the newer GoPros have that, for example, you can then upload that footage to the Ruvi app and then it will add in all the augmented reality stuff that makes it Ruvi, and then you can recreate that same ride or parts of that ride on your indoor trainer in augmented reality.
That is quite cool, isn't it? Or very cool, actually, because it means that you'll be able to do other people's rides around the world as well. So, for example, if someone uploads a ride on the roads or gravel that you might be doing at an upcoming event, you can then get a very good sense of what it's like before you even get there. I might have to see whether anyone's uploaded the Manchester to London route side.
Wow, that would be interesting. I want to see you do that virtually before you do it in the real thing.
No, don't know why I even suggested that. I won't be looking.
But what is cool though is you'd think like, well, if there's loads and loads of user-generated content, how is that then going to be discoverable? So they're creating a smart map search function. So you can basically like look at the globe, work out where you want to go, and then zoom in on it, and then, yeah, you should be able to see routes.
That's cracking, though.
It's really cool, yeah. And they've also changed a few of the other bits, like the heads-up display and stuff like that.
Lots of it's customizable now.
That's right. I think that's the end of Cycling Short, isn't it?
Yeah, went out with a bit of a whimper in the end, didn't it? But yeah, we are quite excited about that update.
Yeah. Well, I think you just suddenly had a moment of anxiety about riding from
Manchester
to London.
I was still thinking about doing it virtually. Anyway.
Hit the like button if you'd like to see Dan do that.
Next up, hack / bodge of the week. And we're going to start with this one that was sent in by Carol. Now, lots of you last week would have noticed there were lots of action figures going about from cyclists, but also pretty much everybody in the world seemed to be posting this kind of thing to social media. So Carol has kindly made one of you and I, Si. GCN presenters, although you seem to be in your Sigma Sports kit, which is what you raced in 2012.
Yeah.
Like I did.
Well, it also looks like you've come out of this rather well, Dan. I'm not sure who figure was modelled on, but...
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. Bit more like George Clooney than usual. Lucky man. Yeah. Whereas I've got a cow looming over my shoulder. My ankles look true to life, though, so that's good.
I see my ankles, they're hidden.
But, I mean, that's what happens in normal life. It's not hidden by a spoke.
Yeah. Based on how I've come out of this, I'm going hack.
Yeah, I'll say bodge then.
Okay.
No, thank you, Carol, for sending that in. That's giving us a little chuckle. Next up, we've got this one sent in from, I assume that's David.
Yeah.
Having bled the brakes on cars many years ago with an easy bleed system using pressure from a tyre, I thought I could recreate something similar for bike brakes. I drilled two holes in the lid of the brake fluid bottle, one for a tubeless valve and one for a hose that fits the caliper. Another hose stretched to fit the bleed port attachment into a waste bottle. Cracking, this is complicated. Pump fluid up to the end of the hose, attach the caliper, opening the nipple and pump fresh bubble-free fluid through the system. No pouring fluid, which can sometimes introduce bubbles. Simple and minimal clean setup. Now, if you have ever bled disc brakes and this means something to you, I think that sounds quite impressive. If it actually works, then that's really cool, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I was a little bit lost after you said having bled the brakes in my cars many years ago.
Yes.
I didn't really understand much from then on. I mean, there have been plenty of instances over the years where I don't feel like we have really got the jurisdiction to decide whether it's hack or bodge, and we have anyway.
No.
Since I don't understand it, I'm going to say hack.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. Yeah, someone's put the effort in. Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, what's next?
David P this time. The seat post and consequently the seat of my gravel bike falls during rides while tightened with a torque wrench at spec. BWR Arizona...
Belgian waffle ride.
Oh, OK. During that, it fell four times and ruined my race, for example. Have replaced the wedge and the seat post, which also didn't fix it. Frame manufacturer said 3-year-old bike, out of warranty, so no assistance. My next two gravel grinders, I've installed a hose clamp to hopefully keep the seat from falling. Not even tested yet.
Oh.
Please bodge this. The entire situation is a bodge, and yes, I am buying a new bike.
Oh, no, David, no. There must be a solution. So there are many, many ways of stopping your seat post from slipping down, aren't there, if the seat clamp is not up to scratch. So obviously, fibre grip, which is like a paste with sand in, basically. Coca-Cola on your seat post, that was one. Basically, you make your seat post really sticky and then go in. You can also shim it out. So with your old Coke can that you've just poured all over your seat post, you can cut out little strips and then that will hopefully wedge it out. Yeah, watch your fingers, kids. Yeah. But no, anyway, so before you resort to your hose clamp, maybe you've tried those others and you've exhausted all options.
Imagine the frustration from David. Do you think I haven't tried everything else at this point? I mean, I've told you I'm going to buy a new bike. I've tried everything.
Yeah, sometimes torquing the bolt up to spec is not quite enough.
Oh.
The price. Well, no, I mean, that's just the price we pay for aero these days, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, anyway.
We don't want to sound too old, but old seat clamps.
Well, I'm definitely getting bodge because that was A bodge and B suggested to be a bodge. But yeah, try side suggestions and see if they help. Finally this week, Frank. After one use of my Zwift Click, I was shocked at how much sweat was pooling on it. Figuring this would reduce its longevity, I needed it out of the drip zone. No longer use my front Garmin mount, I secured it to that. Now I just use my index finger to shift instead of thumb when riding on top of the bars.
Well, there you go. That's quite ingenious.
Yeah, looks very neat, doesn't it? Yeah. I like that.
I actually don't know what the waterproofing is like on a Zwift Click. You'd think, given its intended function, that it would be seriously waterproof.
You'd have thought so, wouldn't you? I mean, you're the person to test it.
Well, I mean, I am, yeah.
We've done a terrible job at describing this to podcast listeners this week.
Oh, we have, haven't we? Yeah. So this is, for those of you who are not familiar, the Zwift Click is the virtual shifter that you can get that allows you to use virtual gears on Zwift. considering real life gears, and it's now mounted on an out front Garmin mount. Yeah.
Then the previous one had a hose clamp trying to prevent a slipping seat post. The one before that had a picture that doesn't give me any more understanding about the brilliant disc brakes than the description did, and the one previous to that was me looking much better than normal live as an action figure inside looking about the same.
Yeah. Just from 2012. Cool, right, well, there we go. That is Hackle Bodge this week. All of them have been pretty good, haven't they, really?
They have. Yeah.
So, yeah, keep your hacks and bodges coming in. We do absolutely love having a look at them. So, how do they do that, Dan?
globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All we've got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below that relates to a photo that we'll give you in just 1 second after the results from last week.
And the results from last week are that the winner is at Burgles. But Caption Competition, I had no idea that goats liked champagne.
Hey, there you go. And to be fair, Pogacar does look like he really likes champagne.
He's enjoying it there, isn't he?
He does it like, yeah.
He's enjoying it there, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a real grimace because he'd struggle to get the cork off. But no. I can't imagine he would struggle with a cork.
They all seem to be smiling there in that photo, don't they?
They
that was the photo from Flanders, which also included Van der Poel and Pedersen. And, of course, it was the same, in a slightly different order, podium at the tour at Paris-Roubaix on Sunday just gone. And that's where this week's photo comes from. And it's this one. If you're listening on podcast, it's Van der Poel at the top step of the podium. Pogacar sort of from the side on a step down, looking a bit strange, I have to say.
He looks like either a naughty schoolboy in comparison to Van der Poel or like a bit nerdy. Yeah, he's kind of like slouched over, isn't he, with a weird expression on his face.
Yeah,
that's like absolutely brilliant.
Looks like a dweeb.
He does. He doesn't look like the great, or maybe he does look like the greatest cyclist of all time. that is literally just an accurate reflection of what we look like.
Anyway, I'll get you started.
Please
as
do.
As per normal. Hello, master. What would you like me to do for you next? Kiss my feet, Poggy.
That's really weird. I'm slightly creeped out by this. But, I mean, it does fit the photo. If you think you can beat that, and I suspect you probably can, then get involved in the comment section down below.
Just before we move on this week, this is a competition within the show. We'll need to read out or remind you that there's also a Precision Fuel and Hydration giveaway going on at the moment. That goes up until the 18th of April, so you've still got time to enter if you're watching this fairly soon after the GCN show is released on YouTube. It's open to those in the UK, Europe, USA, Canada, Australia and New Zealand. Entry will actually close this Friday at 10 a.m. British summertime, and all the details that you'll need are in the description down below. We will shortly let you know what's coming up on GCN in the coming week, but first up, some comments from last week's video, starting as ever with a couple from underneath last week's show, where I was pondering whether gravel riding is just admitting defeat to motorists. After my ride last week, did another 3-hour gravel ride last Saturday, sir.
Crikey!
Have you know. Firstly, this one from Lizzie Gutteridge, who put, enjoyment of getting away from cars doesn't have to be about safety. Cars are noisy and smelly. And sometimes it's just nice to be somewhere more peaceful.
Yeah, that is very true. And actually, I feel like that about riding with Hank sometimes.
Yeah.
Sorry, Hank. Low blow. But yeah, no, I mean, that is true, actually. You do notice when you're in the middle of the woods or whatever, just how blooming quiet it is.
Mm. Very true.
As long as you're not in, like, zone 6, which can often happen. To me, anyway, in the woods. Keith Evans also loved this comment. Said, age has driven me off the road. I'm 81 and have cycled all my life, having cycled on club runs without any fear or worry about traffic. But as I've got older, I found my confidence has gone, as well as my reaction times. I've also found that traffic noise has caused me stress. And then brackets, I sound like a sad old bugger, don't I? Anyway, now I cycle on bike paths, courtesy of Sustrans, which is a UK-based active travel charity, and gravel paths, and enjoy peace and stress-free cycling.
Fantastic.
Which is wicked. I love the fact that you're not only out there on your bike at 81, but you're also watching the GCN show, which is wicked.
Well, yeah, that's cool, isn't it?
So, yeah, shout out to our octogenarians.
Yeah. Finally, from last week's show, Nutella put, finally, a UK rider discovers gravel as gravel, not single track. Well done, Dan. You understood the assignment.
I feel like that may be partly aimed at me. But, I mean, I love riding single track on gravel bikes. It's great.
I would as well, but this is something I've told you a lot. I'm not sure I've said much on camera, but as a mountain biker growing up, the New Forest was horrific for mountain biking because they made no provision. You just had to stick to the gravel tracks. Just by chance, with gravel coming along, it's perfect for that. So I am enjoying it.
And also, last time you went around a corner off-road in anger, your ankle snapped.
Yeah.
So, you know, probably best steer clear of that single track.
That still hurts to this day.
As in, literally, no, or just mentally?
Just mentally.
Yeah.
Took a long time to... Well, it took as long as the doctors told me it would to recover, but I'd just taken a few weeks off in my head, as I used to as an athlete.
I mean, it's what happens when your ankles look like twigs.
Yeah. Well, it's a slightly bigger twig now.
Yeah, still not half the size of one of mine there. Right, underneath Connor becoming a bike cop, there were some great puns. Connor redefines the long arm of the law, which I like. That was from SGP7975.
Beware sabotage, but below, below, below. What's all this then?
And then Eric P. Moss was one of many people who pointed out Connor's it's 7 a.m. in the morning. He suggested have some coffee and try it again.
It's 7 a.m. in the morning.
And finally, Esprez, but as a teenage punk rocker, FTP had a very different meaning.
Yeah, I had a chuckle when I saw that one. It took me a while to get it as well, but then I got there. Mm. I wasn't a teenage punk rocker, might not surprise you.
Older were you?
Yeah, yes, yeah, I mean, I am now. Right, and then underneath Dan's excellent testosterone video, Foxbox72 said, I'm finding Dan's wider health-related content on GCN so good. Such interesting and high-quality videos. Please keep it up / expand on this stuff. It's excellent. In big part to Dan's approachable presenting style.
I'll put this comment in.
Yeah, I bet you did, mate. But
I did it. That was a joke, by the way.
No, I put it in. But I did like the fact, not only because I thought that was really nice, but also expand on this stuff. So obviously we make videos that we think you would like to watch, but also if you ask us to make videos that you want to watch, then we'll totally take that on board as well.
Definitely.
So if there's anything else health-related that you think we should or could explore, then please let us know in the comments section.
Indeed. And underneath which bike is best for a beginner, which is with Rosa and Naomi, who work here on GCN.
And Marek.
Oh, America as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Stuart Potter put, real people riding bikes having fun. This is what we want to see. Whilst Dr. Moonstars put, I don't comment on videos often, but felt the need to do so today. Loved watching this, seeing the joy on all of their faces and listening to them talk about their feelings and experiences put a huge smile on my face, literally. I love all the normal GCN presenter team, but this felt genuine and down to earth, like the real everyday average person biking. Really felt close to home for me, as I've only been cycling for a year.
Yeah, I did have a chuckle when I read Stuart's comment about real people riding bikes and having fun. I mean, I do feel like a real person riding a bike and having fun.
Yeah.
I think even you are right having fun now, aren't you?
Yeah. I've got a training plan through, and sadly, that got me really excited. Got a 10-week training plan for Manchester to London, more on that in a week or two.
Whatever makes you tick.
Yeah, exactly. It?
And yeah, having a plan and a goal.
Yeah, then I can just stop again after that, can I? Right, coming up this week then, I'll start with Thursday, where Alex Payton is checking back in. You may remember he's got some fairly lofty ambitions, hasn't he, for Unbound later on this year.
Second
part of that series, where Alex is talking about how to beat heat and dehydration, which could be issues for him on the day.
It will be issues for him on the day, won't they? But yeah, so check that one in. Check that one in. Check that one out. And then actually, more from Alex on Saturday. So he has been out, as we mentioned, at the Seattle Classic. So you get to see how he got on. And in fact, whether or not he beat heat and dehydration. So, yeah.
No spoilers.
No spoilers there, no. Yeah. Although we have ruined the result.
On Sunday... Si here, as we mentioned earlier, has been weight training for 90 days, so we get to check in and see the results of that.
That's right, yes. Just a midlife crisis, just a couple of years after yours, Dan.
It's funny how they've changed, isn't it? You know, 15 years ago, we'd have just bought a Porsche, not gone down the gym.
Well, I mean, wouldn't it be nice? I'd rather have bought a Porsche than go to the gym, if I'm totally honest. But, you know, yeah. No. Anyway, I didn't do it to get massive.
That's lucky.
Yeah, it was all about wanting to see whether or not it would impact my bicycling after a video that I made in January about how strength training actually is supposed to be really good for you. So anyway, check that one out on Sunday. We should also say, shouldn't we, we've been doing a lot of talking about pro bike racing. You can, of course, watch it live and on demand, can't you? On Discovery Plus or TNT or whatever else.
Or Max over in the US, indeed, yes.
Indeed. I tell you what, there's quite a lot to watch, wasn't there, the last few weeks?
There has been, yeah, and will continue to be, because we've got Bromance the Peel, which has moved to Friday instead of Wednesday for some reason.
Has it?
Yeah, I've only just saw that this morning. Then we've got Amstel Gold Sunday, Flesh Will on the following Wednesday, and then Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and the classics are done, and it's Romandy, then it's the Giro, then the Tour, then the Vuelta.
Time goes on, doesn't it? Crikey. Yeah. Cool. Well, anyway, speaking of time going on, we've probably rambled it on for long enough, haven't we?
We've sort of petered out in the same way we did at the end of Cycling Shorts.
We have indeed. Not quite that bad.